Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 159. This is a show about all sorts of Linux topics, news, hardware, software. I am Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Super Coop, and I am joined by my good friend, the Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin. How's it going, Dort?
The Coop of Superness. I'm doing pretty good. I feel tired, but I know me saying that to you is like a smack in the face. So how are you doing, man?
I am doing well. For those of you who have been following along, my son, Link, was born about 3 weeks ago. And I just now headed back to work this week, so I'm trying to get back into my normal swing of things while helping my wife manage a newborn and our two-year-old son. So yes, sleep is a luxury.
Yeah, and I will say that's one thing in this country, compared to, at least from what I'm led to believe, for a lot of other countries, we in America go back to work at a pretty quick pace and a pretty quick rate. So I feel for you, brother. I know. You're not getting rest. You're going, taking the kid to the doctors and primarily helping your wife try to stay sane.
Oh, yeah. But the nice thing is that I could have taken more time. It's just that this is as much as I could take paid that I could and still have some time left over through September. So, but the thing is that they all have to go to bed sometime. Right. Yes. So I got a lot of fun stuff done over those 3 weeks. In fact, and Josh Williams, shout out to Knucklehead Tech. He'll hate that I haven't done this yet, but Ice Machine Studios. He and I have a kind of a thing going with that. But anyway, my office is now essentially almost done. So,
oh, cool.
Yes, yes. I've been talking about it basically since I've been on the show and probably before then. It just hasn't. The remodel hasn't happened yet, but now it's like 95% done. If you want to see some good photos of my new setup, make sure to follow me on G+, and I'll post some nice panoramic pics of the office as best as I can. And that way you can kind of see what I'm running now.
Very cool, very cool. And yeah, I'll give a quick shout out to Knucklehead Tech, because I haven't mentioned them in a long time in this show. The best way I can put it is he really is one of the nicest guys I think I've met online, even though he's, to his own verbs I'm using, he's a jerk. He talks to me quite frequently on Voxer, and he honestly helps me out with a lot of stuff. Dare I say, I'm not, I feel like I'm a bit close to the forest to see the trees kind of thing sometimes, if that made any sense. I don't know. Hence, that's the kind of thing I would ask him. What was I trying to say? He helps me, and he honestly helps Podnuts a great, great deal. I want to say one of the comments he made 2 weeks ago was, he's starting to feel successful because with Podnuts, because Podnuts Daily, Podnuts has came back, Call That Girl's getting posted, Health Nuts is getting posted, Geeksters are getting posted. All this stuff is getting done, and he hasn't had to do anything. He said that's when he knows he's helping out right. So
he's actually had to take off his butt-kicking boots. He actually put them away.
No, but one thing I know, he will never get rusty.
Oh, no. I would say Josh is a great person to have in your group, because there always needs to be that one guy that will just shoot it to you straight no matter what you think, because he doesn't care. And some people can take that the wrong way, but if you take a step back and you go, well, yeah, that makes sense, that's him.
Exactly.
And I want to thank him too, and I'll get it. He gave me some help with a particular installation, which I'll talk about later in the show. But no, yeah, fantastic guy. Always willing to help. He's aside from like Martin, Chuck, and Aaron, he just lives, I think, like a state or two away from me, so he's pretty close.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's definitely pretty close. And I'm just going to say this. You were here recently on Android App Addicts. One of the apps you brought was the Steam Android app. Just in case you did not know, Mr. Knucklehead Tech is also on Steam. He likes to shoot people, I'll say that.
In video games.
Especially in video games, yes.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yes. we'll actually just roll into my little segment here, since that's a great segue to it. Brace yourselves, everybody. The Steam Summer Sale is coming. For those of you who... And Dor, you've been buying some games lately, or have in the past few months.
Well, I bought a couple here and there, but honestly, I still am ultra green to the idea of a Steam summer sale. I've heard you say it in the past, and I've heard other people, like I believe Ven Stone, say it in the past. I'm not going to lie. I don't really get it, because I haven't been running Steam for a year, I don't think.
Well, okay, so for those of you who don't know, well, I'll break it down kind of simple. Steam, of course, is online distribution center, basically a game distribution center owned by Valve, the company who made, you know, the Left 4 Dead series, Portal, Half-Life, Counter-Strike, you know, Team Fortress, the whole bit. They are basically a digital PC games store. You go to store.steampowered.com. Every summer and heading into every Christmas, they have a large sale on a variety of games for like 2 or 3 weeks straight. And when I say a variety of games, I mean, they'll have this game will be on sale all week. This game will be on sale for the next 24 hours. This game will be on sale for the next hour. And when you think sale, you know, let's say a game's $30, you're thinking, oh, it's going to be on sale for 25. Some of these games are like 90, 95% off, 75% off, 66% off. If you buy this package here, you get these 5 free. This pack of 10 games is just like a ridiculous cheap sale. So if you're into PC gaming at all, the last 2 years, the Steam Summer Sale has run the first 14 to 17 days in July. So by the time this show airs, you'll still have a few weeks to get on there and check it out. What I do suggest you do, what are you going to say, Dort?
Well, I was going to say, now, the one thing I think a lot of people get numb to hearing about percentage off sales, but you were kind of insistent. When they say sale, this is not no 10, 20, 30, 40, even 50% type sale. When they go on sale, they kind of go to another level.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. If you see an advertisement, it's like, games up to 90% off, and then there's like one $2 game that's 90% off. That is not the case with this. I mean, you're talking triple A. I mean, if you can think of, well, for instance, here's a deal I got a couple years ago. Every single game that Valve has ever made, you're talking, you know, a catalog of 15 to 20 titles, right? And all the DLC. Normally, it's like $300-$400 if you were to buy them all separately. They had it on sale for $99, but for like a 3-hour period during one of their sales, they had that price for half off, so it was only $50 to buy everything.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So here's what I suggest you do, because I've been through a few of these. Number one thing, start saving your money, right? And number two, it's hard to stay on top of what games are on sale unless you do some pre-planning. So I suggested this on Android App Addicts, and we'll get into that here in a bit too. If you haven't already, go register an account through Steam, and then you can create what's called a wish list. And then you can just go through the catalog and be like, oh yeah, I add this game to my wish list. It's just a wish list like you'd have on Amazon or, you know, any online shopping store. It's like, oh yeah, maybe someday I'd like to get that. But here's the thing. If you have those games in your wish list, then you can get notifications either by text message or email, or I think a couple other ways too. I think through social media, when they go on sale, or when it's been announced that they will be on sale during the Steam Summer Sale. So you never have to worry about missing that. Okay. I go take a break at this time to make sure I can buy it at this price, that type of stuff. So right. You can plan ahead for it a bit. And another thing too that they do that's pretty cool is they'll throw up, I think they do this the entire length of the sale, if I'm not mistaken, but they'll have kind of like what's, you know, I don't know what, I mean, I can't remember what they call it, but imagine like a pit with 4 games in it. And they say, you know, community will vote, whichever game gets the next vote, that will then be on discounted at by this much percentage.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's rigged and it's fixed or whatever, just for them to come out and say that kind of thing is asking for people's interaction, period.
Yep.
Yeah. My son's birthday just happened. One of the things he got was a gift card. I have it on the side. I think I'm gonna probably end up using this for games, because I mean, he's 9. Wait a minute. Yeah, he's 9. His interest in game is only going to elevate as time goes on, and the more cash I can get in the library now, the better.
Oh, yeah. I just can't suggest taking at least those 2 steps, and you can pre-purchase Steam gift cards, or you can... that's what I do. I'd rather just buy the gift cards and kind of load it on my account rather than have a financial card.
Right.
You can purchase... you purchase the Steam gift cards just about anywhere nowadays. You can get them in, like, I think, I'm pretty sure Target sells them. GameStop sells them. You can even take your, like, physical games You can buy like the Steam cards with store credit at GameStop, which is what I did with a few things. That's how I got my last batch. But yeah, it's fantastic. So yeah, stock up on the Steam credit and make sure to get those games on your wish list that you're going to be interested in. Otherwise, you may miss them.
Well, could I ask you for a stupid favor? And I say I'm pulling this out on you live on a show. So if mm-hmm. you don't do it, I'm perfectly okay with it. Could I ask you to just maybe go through the Steam store and pick like 4 or 5 Linux games that people should keep an eye on and that they should have on their list?
Oh, sure. And that's actually a great kind of segue into what I wanted to talk about next, which was specifically because last year was the first year where, I think the beta was live then. Yeah, the Steam for Linux beta was live, to where it was the first time that Linux users could actually go on and get these games and run them natively on their machines. Right. Well, now Steam for Linux is out of beta. So this is the first year where it's like a real thing. You know, Steam OS has already been announced. So that's in their marketplace. So they're really making a huge push to getting games on Linux, which is why I'm bringing this to this show. That, and I want, if any of you are gamers at all, have any interest in games, or much like what Dor said, if you have friends, family, kids that are interested in games, now is a great time to stock up on some of them. You don't even need to tell them that you bought them. Tell them around Christmas time. Say, here's a code for you. Merry Christmas. Whatever. But yeah, a few of the games that are on my wish list, I'll actually bring mine up right now. One of the games that I'm really looking forward to, and this may or may not be discounted come the sale, it's called Metro, which is a series. It's actually a game, a series of games based on books. And I wouldn't know about this particular release if it weren't for the wonderful guys over at Linux Gamecast Weekly. So, wonderful? LGC.
They're wonderful?
They're wonderful in my eyes.
Ah, okay.
There you go. Yeah. Anyhow. Metro, it's a first-person shooter, kind of a survival horror type of thing. It's post-apocalyptic. You basically can't go outside without wearing specific suits, and then you have to manage your oxygen as well as fighting all sorts of crazy creatures. So if you guys have played Fallout, it's kind of like that, but the graphics in this are completely amazing. A few years back, 5-6 years ago, there was Metro 2033, and then there was Metro Last Light, which came out about 18 months ago. Yeah. Well, they're doing the Metro Redux package, so it's both games completely. And the older game, 2033, is ported to their new graphics engine. So both of them are brought up to the current standards of their graphics engine, and you're getting both games for $49.98.
Well, that scares me, because I'm looking at Metro Last Light video right now on Steam, and to me, the graphics are silly, unbelievably crisp and smooth.
Yeah.
So if they're going to get better, I'm afraid to see how much better they're going to get.
Right. No, yeah, I mean, this isn't, and here's the thing, too, is it's so... Oh, I got to sign in here. It is so, this is one of the first major titles that I've seen. One of the first, not the first, mind you, but to release such a massive re-release of their games natively, it's supposed to be natively on Linux, that are going to look amazing. Because if you've been reading anything in the news, a lot of people have been saying, you know, in order for gaming on Linux to become, you know, a household name, either something like what happened with Steam OS with Valve would have to happen. But more importantly, I mean, it doesn't matter what kind of infrastructure you have in place. It doesn't matter who's backing it. None of that matters. What kind of hardware it needs to run on, what OS you need to run, what distro, none of that matters unless there's that one title that causes people to go, oh, wow, I can play that over there and it looks amazing. That's what it's going to take, and this is going to be one of those games, I guarantee you.
Wow, this is really a beautiful, gorgeous, crazy, good-looking game.
Yeah. And we'll have some links to this in the show notes as well.
Okay, well, that's the first game.
Yep.
And you have more?
Oh yeah. Oh, God. We could do 4 or 5 shows on my wish list alone.
Yeah, that was kind of a softball there.
Yeah. A few others. So... let's see here. Hack and Slash. And I cannot wait. Okay, Hack and Slash is a really, really cool looking title. It's a little top-down kind of adventure game, but basically think of kind of like an old-school RPG, sort of, but it also has some kind of platforming elements to it. But it's just a cute looking little game. It's a normal price on it's only $20. So definitely go check out the trailer. And like you could easily see this for $5 or $10 during the sale. At which point, like at $20, like I would buy this right now. But to see it at a discount, you'd be like, wow, okay. Yeah, so there's one.
By Double Fine, which I know I've heard that name from Ven, Jordan, and Pedro more than a couple times.
Yeah, Double Fine Studios, headed up by Tim Schafer. Tim Schafer made such great games as like Psychonauts and Brutal Legend, and they're making the game. He is a studio with a bunch of different teams working on a few different games all the time. Let's see here, another one. I like to play racing games, but I don't like the traditional like racing simulators.
Okay.
I can't play like a Gran Turismo or like a Forza. I just can't do it.
I like watching those games because they look stunning and amazing, but to sit down and play it, I do not want to sit there and tweak my car endlessly. And
right,
it's just too much like work.
No. Yeah. And then by that time I've spent 2 or 3 hours, you know, retrofitting the car, and then I'm not racing at all.
Yeah.
But there are a couple of good racers. One of which is called Race of the Sun. Mm. You're in a kind of like a what was the game? There was a game on Android. It was some sort of a zombie game. But anyway, you're in this like spaceship, but you're racing on a plane toward the sun. So you're going along the Z axis toward the sun. But as you're flying super fast in this ship, you have to navigate around different terrain. So like that is right up my alley. Like I like to race. I like to have the feeling of I'm going really fast and I have to maneuver and sort of survive, but I could care less about real cars. This looks amazing.
Gotcha. So you're racing to, I'm guessing, your death, the sun?
It's actually, you're in a solar sort of a spacecraft.
Ah.
So it's powered by the sun.
Gotcha. I will say this is the kind of graphics, I'm looking at it now on Steam, this is the kind of graphics I'm almost giddy about, because while they look simple, you might then start to believe gameplay is simple, and watching this video, no. Gameplay, not simple.
Oh, no. Nope, not at all.
That's an awesome game.
Another racer that I'm looking forward to. It's an alpha right now. They are, in fact, once again, Ben Stone on Linux Gamecast happened to bring this on his show recently, and I remember seeing the Kickstarter, but for whatever reason, I did not get on it. But it's this game called Distance.
Yeah.
And Distance, imagine if Dor, I know you used to do a lot of gaming back in the day. Did you ever play F-Zero on the Super Nintendo?
I didn't play it a lot. I was in a Google Hangout last week with Donald Sayers, I want to say, who mentioned that game. I almost forgot about it, and then I went and looked at a video of it. I had to download it on my RetroPie and play it there for a little bit. It's just fun racing. It's not work racing. You know what I mean? It is definitely a good old game.
Mm-hmm. Well, this game, Distance, in my opinion, is like a cross between... Well, it's a lot like F-Zero, maybe crossed with like a little bit of Mario Kart, because there's some elements in the environment which I really like. For instance, and it has more like a kind of like a Tron aesthetic, because it looks like a car, but it looks like it could have been a car like in the film Tron, because there's a lot of like kind of, you know, LED lighting around. If you go to survivethedistance.com, check out the trailer. You can still get into the beta. Get the beta access, like for $15, you can get just the game. For another $10, making it $25, you can get the Steam key, instant access to the private forum, digital art book, and the soundtrack.
Right. And this is going to be on Linux.
Yes, yeah. Whoa. And here's the thing too: if you buy it directly from them and they get the Steam key, it is DRM free and it's cross platform.
Mm.
Yes, so you can play it on Windows, Mac, and Linux.
Dude, PK. I think I understand the F-Zero aspect, and that's because this is really fast, and it's a future racer. But there's also a little bit of flying aspects I see going on, and some altering gravity aspects to it. But this part I saw that literally almost made me chuckle, because you mentioned this game on AAA, I think. You're at one point in time, you're watching this preview, and your car gets cut in half.
Lengthwise, right down the middle.
Because there's a big, basically circular saw that the guy accidentally hits, and it cuts his car basically in half, and then like a second and a half later, his car regenerates. And that is the kind of little thing about the game that just looks really well thought out and executed.
Yeah. And that's another nice thing too about these indie titles is that if you think, I mean, you're getting the game for like $15. If you pay that price, fine. If you happen to get it on sale, even better. But more importantly, this money is going straight to helping these guys develop other games like this. And if you really do, I mean, you speak to this a lot, you know, support those who support you. If you like what they're doing, you know, buy whatever you can of theirs to make sure that they continue to make these great products that you are going to enjoy in the future.
Right. Okay. Now, super quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the difference off the top of your head between the $15 and the $25 version of this?
Yeah. With the $25 version, you also get the soundtrack and access to their to a special forum. There's one other thing. A digital art book. And I will say with the soundtrack, Steve Cherubino might be interested in this because it's a very EDM kind of feel, but they have an actual music artist who has made, this team has made 2 or 3 games together, but he has done the music on all of them. And it's not just your kind of run-of-the-mill, we're just throwing in electronic music here because it's a futuristic game. I mean, it sounds like a good soundtrack.
Gotcha. Very cool. Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of game, to be honest. I'm a dad. This game does not look overly complex or overly brutal, dare I say. To me, this is the perfect young adult game.
Yep.
So I am buying it.
Cannot
right
wait
now.
For it.
Mm-hmm. Purchase cool. Done.
Yeah, but yeah, there's a few games to kind of give you an idea of what I'm looking forward to. And let's see. Oh, okay. Here's one game that you guys, before we kind of move on, that you definitely should be, well, I should say 2 games. If you haven't got these yet through either a previous Steam sale or through a Humble Bundle, you need to check out one of my favorite games of all time, Super Meat Boy, and The Binding of Isaac. The Binding of Isaac is another fantastic title. I do, but you like The Legend of Zelda.
Oh, just a little, yeah.
Okay. Well, so does this guy. His name is Ed McMillan. He created Super Meat Boy and The Binding of Isaac. In fact, The Binding of Isaac was something that he made kind of on a vacation after making Meat Boy with a different programmer than he did with Super Meat Boy. But
Oh, yeah. You told me about this game.
Yeah, this game is awesome. Like, Super Meat Boy is a fantastic platformer. You're a little wad of meat, you know, a little boy with no skin trying to save his girlfriend, Bandage Girl, from the evil Dr. Fetus. And you basically go save her at the end of every level, but then he comes in, swoops, you know, takes her away off of the next level, and you go on and so forth. One of my favorite games of all time. I could play it forever. But Binding of Isaac is a roguelike dungeon game, so it's randomly generated dungeons, but it has the dungeon structure of Legend of Zelda, which he did on purpose because he loves that game. He plays through it every year. So, and then that one, that's probably a whole nother show that we could get into that. But yeah, so it's as far as two other games, and I guarantee you those have been on sale in every single Steam sale I've ever seen. And even if you paid full price for them, they're worth the money. So definitely put those on your list too.
Well, yeah, The Binding of Isaac is only $4.99. I mean, you know.
Right.
It's one of those things. See, this is what my buddy, when I was young, he would call this a bumper. When we were younger, let's just say, he would go to like McDonald's and order a quarter pounder meal and then ask for a bumper of a fish sandwich. When you're at Steam and you're buying a game and then you say, oh, Binding of Isaac, $5. That's a bumper.
There you go. And with that one too, they also have some extra content available. So realistically, what I've seen in the past is games like that that have, you know, either extra character packs or extra mission packs, you know, the game will be on sale, but the entire collection will also be on sale during the Steam sale. So as long as you have just the game in your wish list, you'll get that notification. You can go on there and purchase it.
Very cool. Very cool. Gotta like that. Sales are good.
Yeah. Oh yes. And speaking of sales, you guys are, time is running out to get your Linux Academy 14-day trial for only $1. If you go to linuxacademy.com, check it out. If you can use the is our promo code just links to the rest of us, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Go to linuxacademy.com, sign up for the 14-day trial, use a Linux for the rest of us, just the entire sentence spelled out for the promo code. You'll get that 14-day trial for only $1. And let me tell you, several members of our community have said that, a couple that I know of, they've let their membership lapse to this, and then when they go back to get it going again, it has since gone up in price. So if you like the trial and if you think you're going to get a lot out of it, lock in that monthly payment for as low as you can, and then keep paying it if you can. That way you can lock it at that price for life.
Yeah, see, here's the gimmick. I figured it out, okay? It's $1 for the first 14 days, up to 14 videos. If you use all 14 videos before the 14 days, if you email them, they've bumped it up for other people. They hopefully will bump it up for you too. But here's the thing. After that, it's $25 on a month-by-month basis. Then if you go to 6 months, you get a cost savings of $5 down to $20 a month. Where if you go for the whole year, it only drops $1 down to $19. And here's the reason why. They really don't want you to get that year. They don't want you. They want you to get the 6 month one because let me tell you something. Like he just said, prices will only go up for this now. If you think you're going to get this, I beg you, don't get a 1 month shot. Because I guarantee you after 3 weeks or so, you're going to start getting itchy and you're going to start to worry because you need to get that next month in. I honestly say, do it right. Invest as much as you can up front because I guarantee you in 6 months from now, this is going to cost more than what it costs now. Because this is, dare I say, there's only a couple things in the world where you really truly do get your bang for your buck. A lot of times, you know, you get what you pay for kind of thing. This, I can safely say right now, is one of those things you literally get more than what you pay for. And that doesn't happen too often. And I don't expect it to last forever either. So if you intend on using this as a tool to further your career and advance your career, dare I say you owe it to invest in yourself. If you click in our show notes, there's a direct link with the referral code already in. If you don't, and I'll say it again, if you don't use our referral code, please use somebody else's. Just like when you go to Amazon, if you don't use our affiliate code, use somebody else's. Give as many people credit as you can. Don't just blindly go and do stuff.
But if I had to pick a code to use, it would be ours.
And I'd be definitely appreciative.
Yeah. So yeah, please go check it out. Time is running out for that awesome, awesome offer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before we move on, I'm sorry, I forgot to mention this on when we were talking about Steam on Linux. I had only ever run it on Ubuntu and some Debian-based distros. And I thought, well, if I'm going to be talking about it to people, I want to at least test out on maybe some other distros and see how well it worked, which is why I was talking to Knucklehead Tech, a.k.a. Josh Williams, because he has routinely run OpenSUSE before. Mm-hmm. So I installed it on my laptop that I have available, and Steam installed flawlessly on there. I had no issues whatsoever. I was able to install some of the games that I already had directly on it and play them with my wired Xbox 360 controller. Detected it automatically. Didn't have to download any extra sort of packages or drivers specifically for the controller. It was just plug and play. It was awesome. So if you're using OpenSUSE, I know that it works well. Ubuntu, obviously Debian, Linux Mint, all that. But I've also heard a great success with it running on Fedora as well. So don't think that it's just going to be an Ubuntu-centric installation that it'll work on flawlessly on Linux. I know of those three distros, it works well.
Yeah, and I'll throw out there Arch, too. I know Arch was like one of the first people to really tweak it and get it running really good. And I want to throw out there, you said OpenSUSE.
Mm-hmm.
Throwback. I was on the last Everyday Linux, elementop.com. I highly encourage you, if you don't listen, go listen to that show. Mark, Seth, and Chris are just three of the nicest guys, period. And they talk good stuff. One of the things that I mentioned in there, I just wanted to emphasize a little bit more. If you're newer to Linux and you are having any kind of printer problem whatsoever, and lately I can't stop saying whatsoever for some reason, but I'm saying it again. Any printing issue whatsoever, load OpenSUSE. And this is what you got to do, quite literally, okay? You log into the computer. You take your hands away from the keyboard. You take your hands away from the mouse. You take the printer. You plug it into the wall. You plug it into the computer. You turn the printer on. And it might just install it, configure it, and have it working without you touching anything. Mm-hmm. OpenSUSE supports over 20,000 printers with a zero-click install. Anything else is 100% more work, whether it's Ubuntu, Fedora, Debian, Mint, anything else. Nobody else has this zero-print configuration built into the OS like OpenSUSE. I demand you, if you have printing issues, give it a try, because it just might be the fix that you're looking for.
And I can speak to that, too. A couple of years ago, I installed it, specifically because I needed to print out some tax documents a day. I was going to bind. I was like, okay, I threw it onto a box. And sure enough, my Canon printer, I just plugged it right in, which I hadn't used in a couple of years, just plugged it right in. I didn't need to go install anything else, and I was just able to print those tech documents immediately. So it was very, very nice.
Yeah. Not a fan of more business-centric operating systems, but I think I'm coming around. I will say that.
I am running, GNOME 3. I didn't go with the default KDE install.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's apples, oranges, you know. In the end, it's all the same. It's a question of how comfortable you are with using it. And GNOME, from what I'm hearing, is getting much better. I haven't tried it in months.
Oh, and guess what else I got to install on there flawlessly with no issues?
Kupfer?
Yes.
Okay, well then, there you go.
And Audacity. And I even recorded a podcast with it. So, yeah, it was great.
Good. I'm going to say this. I'm tempted to next year, start to do my talks on Kupfer because not enough people know about it or know the true functionality behind it. And I think it's one of those tools that need to be a little bit more
explored.
Discussed, explored, and tried by people because I'm now at the point, it doesn't matter what desktop I have. Because I don't use a desktop. I never click a menu button. I never go I never do anything that desktop does except for switch desktops, and that's it.
And what's funny is that in Ubuntu and in OpenSUSE, and I think Fedora, well, in GNOME 3, but anyway, you can hit, you know, the super key, aka the awful Windows key. And, you know, bring up the, you know, the HUD, the prompt to start typing the program you want to launch, just hit enter and it loads it. Even though that's one button, I still will use Kupfer. I do control space and then start typing because it's more kind of instinctual. I don't know. It was very weird for me to like, I just control space, boom, 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 done.
Yeah.
Yes, it's great. Love it.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Dare I say, instead of training yourself towards a specific desktop, you can load any desktop and then use Kupfer. And granted, there's certain things that probably are simpler in a desktop, but then, dare I say, you're beholden to the desktop developer. And if one thing we've seen here recently, desktop developers don't care what people want for the most point. They are going to do what they want to do, when they want to do, how they want to do. So taking a little bit of that control away from them, to me, dare I say, is a good move. And that's why I like Kupfer. Hasn't changed in years and years and years and at least years. So I'm going to keep using that until it's deprecated and I have to build it from source and I have problems with libraries. I'm going to keep using it.
It is fantastic.
Yeah. And it's from Belgium where they make good beer.
I'm drinking some Belgian beer tonight.
Good man. Okay. Now this link here I found over at Make Tech Easier, and it's one of those little stupid things that, to be honest, it's really new user friendly, but I saw it and I had to do a couple of them too. Okay. Eight, and this is entitled 8 Useful and Interesting Bash Prompts. Okay. When you pull up your default terminal in 99.9999% of the distros, you're going to be running Bash. Bash has a deep configuration possibility, I'm going to say, and they're doing a little bit of unique things here. The first one is basically it uses emoticon-esque typing to show you a happy face or a sad face when you issue a successful command or a bad command. And it's just the leftmost of the screen. But when you type your command, hit enter, it will show you either green happy or red sad face. Or even change the color of the command itself is the next one. Then there's multiple line prompts, color manager prompts. One of the reasons I started using Fish years ago when it was mentioned by Russ Winter, the Techie Geek, was because it was so heavily color-coded. I could really easily type and understand what I was typing just by glancing at the colors. It made sense to me. So here's how you can bring your color into your typing and your commands with Bash itself. There's more than a couple other things in here. I seriously beg people, when you're setting up a new computer for a new user of Linux, you might want to investigate some of these and maybe put it in their form. It might make their terminal experience a little bit easier to digest.
I can speak to that specifically because I'm looking at number 4, color manager prompt. Mm-hmm. and I have to print a lot of documents at work. It's basically just emails and documentation, and it's just pages upon pages, and I need to print them, disseminate them that way, and then keep them on hand for reference for, you know, however long. But it's just blocks of text to me, and I'm just like, what the hell am I going to do? So I literally just went out and I started buying color-coded highlighters to highlight specific things throughout the documents. And if it weren't for those colors that I use, it would be very hard for me to go through and find a lot of that stuff. So to see some of this color-coded in, you know, orange and a lighter gray and, like, yellow, I think it's very cool. And it would also make, I would believe, learning the command line and doing certain commands, and especially the paths, being able to color-coordinate the paths would be really beneficial to newer users.
Yeah, one of the most painful things to me in a bash prompt is when I type something and then something else and then something else, and then I try to visually scroll my eyes back and figure out, well, where was that last command at and what came after it? And it makes it a little bit hard when everything's in gray text to really find where everything happened. When you color code things, it's very instantaneous and obvious where something happened, where your cursor was at when you hit enter, and then the screen jumps a couple lines. You can easily go back and tell, because I have to literally control L clear my terminal so often, just so when I type something and I get a result, I can easily tell what happened.
Mm.
Okay. This next link I found on Wikipedia, and I can lie, I'm using this one for work related things. Enterprises, big enterprises, medium enterprises, small businesses, home office, whatever. You always want to know what possibilities are out there for any type of software that you might need or your organization might need. You can just go out and do a Google search, and you're going to find people who are artful and talented at SEO. You're not going to always find the best solution. You're going to find the best, quote unquote, advertised solution. So I found this list, and I'm using this as a good jumping off point at the least. You know what I mean? And it's on Wikipedia, and it's basically called List of Free and Open Source Software Packages. And obviously I found this link when I was on my phone because I bookmarked the mobile version of the website, which of course you'll have that once in a while. But the list is insane. Okay.
Yeah, this is huge.
Yeah, from everything from science and mathematics and finance to data mining, plotting, surveying, disk partitioning, IRC clients, instant messaging, portal servers, language, typing, geography, video editing, video encoders, 3D animation, version control systems. There's no way anyone can look at this list and not be totally unaware that all of this software existed. There's going to always be at least a couple pieces of software that no one knew about in this list. And it's good for me to just be reminded just how much stuff is actually out there.
No, and just clicking on some of these, I mean, you're seeing huge lists. And I've never seen a collection of something like this before, just in one document or one page, to really kind of dig through it and go, oh, wow, yeah, let's try this and that and this. Looks really cool.
Yeah, and dare I say, I can even use this as a tool to make myself sound more educated than I actually
am. Oh, of course.
And especially, and I don't want to say it helps me lie to people, but it helps people believe I'm really competent when I might not be.
And trust me, you need that help.
Well, you know, yeah. It's just really good, interesting list, and I cannot implore people enough. Keep it bookmarked. And whenever you think, I need a backup solution, I need disk imaging solution, I need the ability to rip a DVD, I need the ability to put up a take a look at this list, and I guarantee you, you're going to have better options than just going to Google and doing a search, or DuckDuckGo.
You know what it reminds me of is that the GE Geek website?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sort of, yeah. GE Geek. Michael, I can't remember his last name.
No, oh, it's terrible.
But yeah, he has basically his own link depot that he created for all sorts of PC software over the years. And it's, ultra comprehensive. He was on an episode of Podnuts a while back.
Yeah. GE Geek is maybe one of the most comprehensive Windows tool troubleshooting utility websites I think I've ever seen. Yeah. He went ballistic.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. This next one, first, there's an honorable mention that I'm 99% sure is not on this list. Okay. This is over at Magpie. I'm sorry, themagpie.com, which is the Raspberry Pi magazine. Okay. The digital download magazine, which I honestly also am believing that you might be able to actually buy now the physical copy. But this is a list of Raspberry Pi operating systems. The one that I'm 99% is not in this list because technically it's not really an operating system, but it is in my heart. And it's called Retro Pi. Now they do spell it P-I-E, R-E-T-R-O-P-I-E. It's really nothing more than a layer, a collection of packages on top of Raspbian. The two applications that are mainly used are called Emulation Station and RetroArch. Emulation Station is the browser to browse your different emulated game systems, and RetroArch is the back-end engine to actually take the ROM, load the ROM, and display the game. That's not mentioned in here, but this is a really good, maybe the best list I've seen, collection of different Raspberry Pi operating systems. And there's a couple, more than a couple on here I had no idea existed. Like Bodhi.
Mm-hmm.
Bodhi, whatever.
Yeah.
They even have Arch, which I'm sure Knucklehead Tech probably already knew about. He probably helped them get launched. Even FreeBSD, NetBSD is in here. I cannot encourage people enough. You need to check out this list if you have a Pi and you're not sure what to do with it. I mean, they even have OpenWRT Gen 2. Gen 2, people. That kind of blows my mind.
Yeah, and also, what was it? Ohio Linux Fest 2012. The guys at the Red Hat table, well, the Fedora table next door, had PyDora, who's what it was called back then, a version of Fedora to run on the Pi, running on a Pi right there. And it was snappy, man. I mean, I thought, is a full distro going to really work on these things? But if the maintainers go the length to optimize it well, then yeah, it can be a usable system. And being as popular as the Pi is now, you're seeing a lot more of these. And this is a very good list to kind of get started with where to go.
Yeah, I'll say I have the original Pi, so it has half the RAM, 256. Debian with OpenBox was a little bit laggy. It was a little bit slow. It was a little bit turned down. But the videos I've seen on YouTube of the full 512 version of the Raspberry Pi, which is the only kind you can buy right now, mm-hmm. like you said, I was pleasantly shocked at how well it performed. And since the iteration of the first Raspberry Pi, driver development has really been another key factor on getting everything to run much better. Like XBMC and OpenElect, when they first came out, the video performance was less than stellar, much less than stellar. But the driver support and the work went into making the drivers better, to where now I'm blown away. A 35 piece of hardware can actually be a competent home theater PC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just awesome.
We are in the future, Dor. You know that, right?
The future's now.
It is.
Keep moving forward.
Is that a suggestion that we go on to the next link?
I don't know. I just said it instinctively.
Okay.
Okay. Now, there is going to be a link specific in the notes to the Retro Pi. Long story short, nothing is perfect. Okay. This maybe is the most perfect emulator I've ever used in my life, with the built-in functionality via scripts on the back end to add Xbox controllers, PS3 controllers, all different kinds of controllers. Where this is the worst experience of my life is trying to configure the controller via the interface. It, period, does not work. But once you get it installed and booted, you can SSH into your Raspberry Pi. And the file you're looking for is es_input.cfg. Basically, if you're using a PS3 remote, you basically Google search es_input.cfg space PS3 controller. And voila, you'll find the exact file, and it will tell you where you put that file, and you SSH into your Pi, you copy that file over, you reboot your Pi, and it works perfect. Literally.
Let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Have you yourself linked your PS3 controller to it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, did you do it with a USB cable, or did you do it with a Bluetooth adapter?
Didn't need the USB cable. There's two ways to do it. One way was with the USB cable. One way was without. Without, you had to figure out your Bluetooth ID number. With the USB cable, you are walked through a process where it says, okay, doing this. Okay, do you want to do that? Yes. And then it says, okay, now plug your PS3 via Bluetooth. You plug it in, you hit enter, you wait a couple seconds. It says, okay, now unplug your USB from the PS3 controller. Okay, you hit enter. And then voila, it's done. And basically, I copied over that config, and I basically just got my Bluetooth ID myself and just put it there. And it was very easy.
But you were running it over Bluetooth, right?
Yes,
sir. I mean, with a Bluetooth adapter on the Pi.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay. One of the things I would suggest is that if you have a Pi and you don't have a Bluetooth adapter yet, you're thinking about going that route, or you're thinking about hooking up a bunch of different devices to it, but you're not sure if you need a USB hub or what kind of hub will power the Pi and the devices. If you go to Amazon or podness.com/Amazon, I should say, and search for Pluggable, that is Pluggable. He's a guy, I believe he's based out of California, but he has his own peripheral company. Great, great guy. And yeah, I've bought a few of his items. He has a really highly rated Bluetooth adapter on there, 4.0 low energy micro adapter for $12.95. And then I've also, if you search for Pluggable, like Raspberry Pi or Pluggable USB hub, he has a great hub. I bought two of them, but the hub itself, if you look at the video on YouTube or the link inside the Amazon, the YouTube link inside the Amazon page for that device, he has a video where he's running it, the Raspberry Pi itself, like three or four hard drives, a keyboard, a mouse, and a Bluetooth adapter off of just the one device.
Nice.
It's able to power all of it. Yeah, so he made it specifically to be used with the Pi, and it's a cool little piece of kit. So definitely, if you're thinking about getting those, definitely use our affiliate link, podness.com/Amazon. Go over there, check it out, and pick it up.
Very cool. Yeah. Honestly, I believe this was the vendor that I heard you mention before, and I remember I browsed all of the products they had to offer, and I was pleasantly shocked at they a lot of them seemed very fairly priced, but also everything I looked at had easy 300 plus views, and they were all pretty much 4.5-5 stars.
Right, which you guys have to know this when you're shopping on Amazon or eBay anyway. It could be the cheapest price one. It could look all flashy and look all nice, but unless the reviews are good, like, yeah. I never pull the trigger and buy it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, actually, it's even cheaper now. I just found it. It's the Pluggable 7-port high-speed USB 2.0 hub with 3 amps of power adapter. It's only $17.95.
Oh, my Lord.
And it has just under 700 reviews, holding tight at about 4.5 out of 5 stars. So yeah, awesome. Awesome job.
Very cool. Very cool. I'm meant to keep that one here on my list.
Oh yes.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay. Now, yes, sir.
Real quick. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I meant to mention this as well. When we're talking about using the RetroPie to play games on it, we're of course speaking about digital copies that you have made as backups of games that you already own. As I do frequently, because my neighborhood is frequently raided by ninjas in the night, and they do nothing but steal physical media. So thank Cthulhu that I have digital backups of all those games, just in case something like that were to happen. But at the same time, if I were to load those on a RetroPie, then I get to play them. So that's good, too.
Well, you know, they're good ninjas. Wait a minute. No, there's not. They're samurais when they're good. They're ninjas when they're bad. Okay, gotcha.
I don't know what kind of books you read in school, Dor, but that is not accurate.
I don't read. Maybe that's the problem.
Okay. Well, I'll find that there's got to be a ninjas versus samurai rap battle. I'll find a link. I'll send it to you. You can just sit back and watch and listen.
There's a rap battle for everything. Okay. I'll say that.
That's right.
Okay. I have professed month, week after week, after month, after year, my passion for the Raspberry Pi. I love the disruption it's caused. I love the innovation it's helped. And I love, to be quite honest, I can have a portable computer in my pocket at such a low cost and have fun with it. But I will say this. If you go to bananapie.com, I believe it is, bananapie.org. Oh, it's not bad. Maybe it is. I'm going to have to make sure I get it. Banana Pi is a $57, basically, clone of the Raspberry Pi, but it's actually a lot more powerful. Okay, bananapie.org, apparently they've closed it. They've changed the website, looks like. I'll get a good link, actually. Okay, here's the gimmick. More than twice as powerful as a Raspberry Pi. Very similar form factor, almost identical form factor. Slightly different plug and socket configuration, so your old case probably will not work. But it's only $55. It's not even twice as expensive as a Raspberry Pi. I firmly believe the Banana Pi is going to shake things up. Now, I just went through all of the different list of the Raspberry Pi OSs, aka the support from the community. If the Banana Pi does not get the support from the community, it does not matter how much powerful it is. And I'll say, in my experience, it does not matter if it's twice as powerful hardware. And that really means nothing in the end game of things. It matters how well designed are the drivers. How optimized are they? Because if they're very optimized at like a good rate, then I honestly can expect it's going to run really good. But if they're not, then it's just not going to be very good.
Or someone else is going to come along with better optimized drivers anyway. The one great thing that these devices have going for them, especially the derivatives, like the Banana Pi, and there was a couple other ones. I think there was a Pumpkin one, which has different chipset. But is the fact that it's all the same hardware. I mean, per you know, brand, per board, it's the same chips that they're working with. So you don't have to worry about optimizing it for, oh, if you're running, you know, this and that on your computer, if you're running these hardware specifications, that's fine. All the specs are the same on this version of Raspberry Pi, on this version of the Banana Pi. So they are able to optimize it much better, and it's going to be a better end user experience because of it.
Yeah, I will say, I'm not getting, I think, the right website that I had bookmarked at work. So I'll try to find that and get it updated in the notes. Bottom line is, right now, technically, you can buy it at Alibaba or at AliExpress. I don't encourage anybody to just randomly throw money at Alibaba or at AliExpress. If you have a credit card that is secure, or a throwaway credit card, and you want to give it a shot, you can buy one right now from Alibaba for $50. It does look like bananapie.org has them available, but it's in a language I cannot comprehend.
Chinese.
I don't know. I can't comprehend.
It is Chinese. I'm telling you. I'm not asking you.
Okay. No, I just, you know. I would like to get one to play with. I would just say that. I would really like to get one to play with.
Yeah. Yes, it would be fun. I gotta say, I have to utilize my Raspberry Pis first before I can justify getting one of these. I'm already utilizing one of my Pis for that thing I talked about, the video looper deal at work, which is great, but it's just sitting at work being awesome.
Gotcha. Yeah, and now it does look like, I believe Martin found me a good site. It's lemaker.org. It has very good information on it in English, so we can read it. Quick start guides, download guides, where we can get Debian and other things installed on it. And I will tell you, from what I just said earlier, if you can get Debian installed on this, then you can go get the Emulation Station and RetroArch. And there is a script file, too, you can download to get RetroPie installed, where it wouldn't shock me if that same script even would work. To where, bang, you got yourself... And the whole reason I'm thinking about this is because I love the N64. I think the N64 is one of the best consoles ever, okay?
Games, has a great F-Zero game on it.
Oh, well, it has a great F-Zero game on it, has Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, and has GoldenEye on it, if I'm not mistaken. All three of them. And I try to play the N64 on my RetroPie, and it is not powerful enough. And I cried. And then I went to bed, and then I woke up, and I tried it again, and it still didn't work. So if I could get more powerful hardware that could let me possibly run those three games, I could go out on disability and stay moderately sane. I'm just saying.
But you could still podcast, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Shouldn't be too hard.
That's all I care about. I mean, supporting your family through monetary compensation from a job, whatever. You know, can you be on the show tonight? That's what I care about.
Exactly. So we'll have to see how it goes. And I will say, I might be able to talk my wife into letting me buy a Q-Box. Where if I do get a Q-Box, that's going to probably get, that's the 2x2x2-inch computer. If I can talk the wife into letting me get that, I'm going to probably put that in my son's room upstairs with Android loaded on it, with Netflix, with Plex, and RetroArch is a Android application as well. So he can sit in his room and watch his Netflix, watch the Plex videos, and play old school gaming. Because I'll say, shockingly, my kids love Tetris, Pitfall, what was the other one? The Frogger. I was literally shocked at how much my children loved those old games. Because I thought, there's no way. There's no way they're going to like it. But no, me wrong. They loved.
Well, as always, Dor, if you need help talking to your wife.
I need...
You're a pro wrestling fan. You'll get this, right? It's like you're in the ring with her and she's about to just completely slam you. You're completely just, you know, you're about ready to just lay down and call it a night, right? And there I am in the corner, and I'm reaching for the tag. I'm clapping my hands. I'm getting the crowd going because I need you to get up off that knee and raise your hands up, just start shaking them, and then come over and leap to me. I'll come through the ropes. Heck, I'll even hop over the top rope, right over the turnbuckle, use it to just get in there and talk some sense to her so you can get that cue box.
Hot tag, hot tag.
I'll do that all for free, too. You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Yes. Let's see. It might happen because my excuse is, look, it's a birthday present for me. Because my birthday just passed as well. But it's also a birthday present for him. Two birds, one stone. How can you pass up the opportunity? And I'm close.
I don't know, man. That sounds like a good pitch.
I know. Trust me, it was well thought out.
If you need someone to punch it up, Tommy, I can take a look at it.
Absolutely. Okay, there's a link here I want to throw out there. And I'm literally just throwing it out there. Because I have no idea in all actuality what I'm talking about. And I don't know how many other podcasters will say that out loud. But Docker is a modified container. Docker is almost like portable applications. There's areas on your hard drive you can designate as Docker applications to where they can have completely independent libraries and resources, and they're all like pigeonholed in their own little thing. So I could literally run multiple versions of Java, Apache, MySQL, whatever, and have them each in their own Docker. Okay. The one thing I never heard anyone talk about, because I hear about DockerCon, I mean, me and Martin blew me away, DockerCon. What I don't hear people talking about is a way to manage all of those Docker instances. And I heard about this one on, I believe it was Linux Install podcast. I want to say it's called Linux Install, and it's called Shipyard. So there's containers, there's Docker, and there's Shipyard. Okay. If you scroll down on the main GitHub page, you can see there's a login, username, or password, and then there's screenshots of the Docker configuration via a web GUI. I can barely comprehend what is Docker and when I would use Docker. Okay. I need all the help I can get. So having a graphical user interface via a web browser, in my opinion, can only help people get over that initial hump of learning what is Docker, when is Docker, why is Docker. I can say I do believe it's kind of the future, dare I say. It's very easy and quick if you want to deploy development environments for your job or testing environments or duplicate environments for clustering purposes. To do it in Docker, everyone says, is very easy.
And I learned about Docker when we were at NELF this year. Mm-hmm. And you were explaining to me, and I was like, that kind of sounds like BSD jails. And
yes.
You were kind of like, yeah, yeah. And everybody, like Jonathan too, was like, yeah, kind of. And then we came back from lunch. We're sitting there in the hallway, you know, the hallway track, the famous hallway track, the best track of any conference. And I'm sitting there, I'm just like, somebody mentions Docker. I'm like, oh, yeah, I've heard of it. And then this guy starts talking to me. He's like, oh, yeah, what have you heard? And blah, 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 whatever. Well, his name is Will Weaver. He was the guy doing the talk on Docker. I just happened to bump into him in the hallway. And he's like, oh, so you've heard of it? And I goes, oh, yeah, Will Weaver. He just introduced himself. He's just getting ready to go into his talk. And he goes, well, what do you know about it? And I said, well, from what I understand, it kind of sounds like BSD jails, but for applications. He's like, you get it. I was like, I somewhat get it. Don't give me too much credit. But I asked him specifically, I said, well, answer me this. Because you, Dor, do your audio editing in a VM using a Q-Tractor. Yeah. I was asking him if it would be possible to have that have such a an audio editing setup in Docker. And his short answer was yes, but, and then a few other things in the background would have to have taken place. But that is a great example to run a contained application and then deploy that Docker instance, as it were, to maybe, you know, like a work group or to an enterprise or something is a possibility of utilizing it. So, yeah, sounds good to me.
Yeah, the only thing I failed to get is would I have to have Jack audio in that instance of Docker, or would I have to have Jack audio on my base operating system installed and configured? And that's what I'm having a hard time finding out, because not too many people are using Docker in conjunction with audio-centric applications, I'll say.
Yeah, that I don't know.
Yeah, I've looked and I can't find a clear answer.
But why don't I track him down?
Good man. Okay.
Throw the question his way again, and maybe we can have him on and he can explain it in greater length.
Well, I tell you right now, I've heard a couple people speak about Docker. He, by far, was one of the nicest and sharpest guys, it seemed like, when talking about Docker.
He was very cool. And I'll tell you what, when it came to the after the conference shenanigans, he was also cool. I'll leave it at that.
Very, very, yes.
Oh, yes. Very cool. All right.
Okay. There's a link in here about Chromebooks.
Yeah, I wanted to bring this a while back. Well, actually, I think I was out on leave when I and also thank you guys for being patient, and thank you to Martin Obando Rambo MBO for coming on the show in my absence. I was just so busy with, you know, family, and it came to Monday night. I'm holding the baby. I'm looking at the wife. You know, she's just so couldn't quite do the shows for a couple weeks, but you guys still went on. I hope you guys liked that Ike interview with Ike Doherty. It was a pleasure talking with him. But one of the things I did want to bring about a month ago was the fact that, and Dora and I talked about this, there was an article I read maybe a couple months ago that released the end-of-life dates for all of the current, as of already yet, produced Chromebooks and Chromeboxes. And our Chromebooks, the ones that Dora and I own, are the Acer C710s, were going to reach end-of-life, which means they will receive no updates from Google as far as the Chrome OS is concerned. Sometime next year in 2015,
yeah.
Which kind of made me take a step back and think, well, that kind of stinks, you know? But then I'm like, well, I did buy a $200 micro laptop.
Yeah.
How long can I expect it to really be support? I mean, I'm just going to throw Linux on it anyway. How long can I expect it to be supported with software updates to the manufacturer? But apparently a lot of people also kind of threw up their hands and said, well, what's the deal, Google? So the Chromebook end of life is now on a 5-year cycle. So our Chromebooks will get support all the way through 2017, which I got to say, I mean, 5 years, pay $40 a year for the device.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it's, you know, just dollars a month. So yeah, what, like just over $3 a month. Yeah. Well worth it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I'll still say, I think the best investment anyone can do is as soon as you buy a Chromebook, buy more RAM. Period. Buy more RAM. It's one of those things I think that can really help the overall experience. And now with 5 years of support, even after that purchase, you're still going to pay so much less. And I still believe this, two things. One, the Chromebook really does meet a large spectrum of normal people needs. All they want to do is Facebook, and all they want to do is YouTube, and all they want to do is go to the, you know, plain Jane websites. But two, I dare I say I'm still kind of bullish on thinking this is probably the safest web browsing experience that is offered out there. Only time will tell if that's a good statement or a bad statement, but from everything I gather, it is probably the safest web browsing experience you can give somebody. And it's very isolated. The possibility of issues are extremely few and far between. There is no such thing as crypto locker on Chrome OS.
Right, right. Yeah, you're not going to have to pay more than the cost of your machine to get your data back.
Yeah. Yeah, right. and it literally would be the more than the cost of a Chromebook. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bought one for my dad a couple months ago, and he loves it. And at that point, and this is not me hating on Macs, I swear to you, this is not me hating on Macs. Okay,
but
no. Oh, hush your mouth. Come on, you haven't even said it yet. You don't know what the hell you're talking about. He's always been a big fan of whenever he buys and whenever he makes a I would say a mid-range purchase. I'm thinking of, you know, some of his firearms, some of his, you know, technology, some of his, like, you know, gardening equipment, like his, you know, rototiller. He would just save up and buy it cash, right? So he's running this old, I mean, just, God, it's close to 10 years old now. It's one of the original Mac Minis. It's the Core Solo Mac Mini, right? Yeah. And I've already done a RAM upgrade on it like 5 years ago, and it still just runs like garbage because it already reached the end of life as far as OS X is concerned. So it's dead in the water. He's having horrendous issues with it all the time. And just because it's not supported anymore. It's nothing against OS X or whatever. Okay, fine. But he was saving up all this money to buy this new iMac. Well, the new iMac was however much it was, you know, $1,700, $2,400, whatever. And I said, well, what are you going to do with this machine? Knowing that I knew what he was going to do with the machine. He's like, well, I need to check email. I need to do this. And I'd like to maybe look at photos. And because he doesn't have Facebook or anything. And no social media whatsoever. Just all be, you know, basic user stuff. I was like, well, why don't you spend like $200 or $300 on this huge monitor? And I showed it to him at a store, and then $199 or $179, however much it was, on this little box here. And then you can do all of that, and you never have to worry about viruses.
Yeah.
And he's like, but what am I gonna do with all the extra money I was gonna plan on spending on the Mac? And he giggled, you know. So I'm like, I don't know, that's up to you. So yeah, he pulled the trigger and did that. Man, he loves it. But he got a webcam. We're able to chat, you know, through Google Hangouts because he has a Gmail account set up. Yeah, he loves it.
Very cool. Yeah, I can safely say that when my kid starts to demand a computer for his schoolwork, he is not getting a full computer just because I don't think it's necessary. Now, when he wants to learn computers, that's different. But when he just needs it for schoolwork or for his normal, let's say, Flash games, he's just going to get a Chromebox. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. So I did this a while back, well over a year ago, when my first son was born, and I got some great response from you guys. So I want to kind of throw something similar out again. I now have a son who will be 3 in July, and I have a newborn here. And my son, Quentin, my almost 3-year-old, he, you know, uses his tablet every day. He's not so used to running, you know, like games on like a laptop or a PC yet, because that's one of the things I'm doing with a Raspberry Pi. But what I want to know from you guys, and please send in correspondence to this, and we'll let you know where to send it to in a minute. If you have kids, that please let me know when you started to get them involved with your tech projects, whatever it was, whether you guys were building a machine and showing your kids, you know, how, you know, the different carbs go to the motherboard and the hard drive, the CPU, whatever it was. If you guys were doing, you know, modifications, doing some hacks on some home devices, I would love to hear those stories, because my office is just it's so much stuff and so much workspace area to where I'm getting ready to do a modification on a router, and I'm thinking of bringing him in, and he's still kind of learning how to talk, but he can definitely, you know, watch, and he gets very excited around all of my little stuff. So I'm thinking of bringing him in, you know, with my drill and the Dremel and everything, and kind of having him help me. So I'll report back on that, but send me an email to cody@podence.com and let me know if you have kids and you had them do help you with tech products, what kind of age they were, and what that story was. I'd love to read it.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. And I'll just say, it doesn't matter. I got no problem throwing myself under the bus. It doesn't matter if I don't get an email for 5 days in a row, I'm still going to be behind in my emails. I don't know what it is. It's like one of the constants in the universe. Cause some days I literally do check my inbox, and even after getting rid of all of the mechanical email, when I only filter down to real people sending me real emails, I still sometimes get like 40 to 50 a day. So I'm always behind, and I do publicly apologize for that, but I am doing my best to try to keep up with it.
That is quite the load. Yeah. During my time off, my inbox was reaching about 600. I cleared it down to about 87.
Good man.
And now I'm going back and answering those and making sure to properly tag and dispose of them accordingly. Just, you know, get them out of the inbox, so don't have to worry about it.
Gotcha, gotcha.
Cool. All right. Well, Dor, where can we find you on? Do you have anything else for the show, or are we all set?
The one thing I want to let people know is that we do have a change on our network. Android App Addicts has went through a metamorphosis.
Yep, you got it.
Metamorphosis. We were a weekly show hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours, where we would go through apps, comment on apps, and go through more apps, and then comment on apps, and then emails and stuff. The good thing about the show is quite literally nothing has changed about the show except the length. What I mean by that is now we have 5, sometimes 6 days a week, daily releases of the show. 15 to 25 minutes seem to be the average. And we also now have developers and people in the Android universe kind of thing stopping in once in a while to talk to us about either application development, the Android ecosystem, all kinds of different stuff. I highly encourage you, if you never checked out that show or you listened to us a while ago, try it again at podnuts.com/AAA. I personally think it's an extremely fun show, but it's also the show where I think we impart a lot of different knowledge of all the different kinds of apps that we find with personal hands-on real people experience. But we also have guests on from time to time too. Isn't that correct there, Mr. Cooper?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Some good guests. In fact, I got to co-host this whole week. So, and then I was speaking to Eric Ardini, a.k.a. the manager, a.k.a. the booker of the show. And I'm going to be on all next week, too. So you'll have 10 episodes of Cody Cooper spilling over, crossing over into other Podnuts territory on Android App Addicts. And we got to have the CEO of Fiveby on last week. And what was really cool is that not only did we have his dedicated episode for the week, but he actually hung around and he did a real Android App Addicts episode. He brought an app to the show because he's really cool. And I had never used Fiveby. I booted up once, kind of like, yeah, whatever. Because Door, you're a Fiveby addict. Like, you need to. And I made a suggestion to the CEO of Fiveby during the show. You have to go check it out. It's quite comical about what to do for people who are like Door, who watch a lot of Fiveby videos.
Yeah. The only thing I can say to anyone, look, if you download the app, you're warned. It's an extremely frictionless application with extremely good hand-curated content that's Chromecastable. I've never used my Chromecast as much, period, as when I started using Fiveby.
And they have different, I'm going to say channels, but like different kind of like tracks as far as different content. But literally one of the tracks is like On the Toilet or On the John, something like that, right? Which I think it might have been Josh.
Yeah.
It might have been Knucklehead Tech again, who was saying, yeah, I've lost hours of my life on the toilet while looking at those videos.
He said something like his legs go numb.
Because he's like, I should get up, but I really should continue to watch this.
Yeah. And I'm going to throw this out there again because I am a parent. 99.999999% of everything I bring up on that is extremely kid friendly. I literally sit with my kids and I pull up either the text, you know, actually it was the science part of it, I want to say. I pulled that up and I hit play. I sat there with my kids multiple occasions for 20, 30, an hour plus at a time learning stuff. And I think it's really cool that they honestly offer this service, number one. But that Greg from Fiveby was honestly kind of bullish on the idea of gearing stuff more towards kid-friendly type content than blatant cussing type content. Because dare I say, the blatant cussing type content is very easy to find.
Oh, yeah.
But really good quality, family-friendly type content, that takes work to find.
Yeah. And if you want to get some details as far as how they curate that content, definitely listen to that episode. It was 195, if I'm not mistaken.
Sounds right.
Android App Addicts 195. And in addition to that, if you already are a listener of Android App Addicts, or if you're a new listener, if you're going to go check out the show, I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. If you own an Android device, lots of good games and applications brought several times a week now. If you would, though, please go to podnuts.com/AAA survey, because there is a survey you can go fill out for the show, which will help get some information in order to help make sure that they get the right advertisers on the show. Because there are, if you're listening to a show about Android applications, you don't want to hear, you know, like an advertisement for, you know, maybe adult diapers or something.
Or maple syrup,
yeah. You want to maybe more toward your interests. And that will help. And it'll also help with, determining what kind of content you guys might want to hear for getting future app developers on the show. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and dare I say, cool. 99, again, I keep saying this number a lot this show, I think, 99.9999% of all of the income I earn off that show is literally going to go into new hardware, so I can be respectable compared to the average listener on the show. Having 2+ year old hardware kind of inhibits my experience for certain applications and for certain things. And what I really would like to do, every month, 2 months, be able to buy a new piece of hardware and then give away the old hardware on the show. And when I say old hardware, literally newer device, less than a couple months old. That's the goal.
Mm-hmm. I'm all about that. As long as I'm in that pool of people that can win it.
As long as you're not on the show.
Then, Eric, I'm sorry. I'm no longer affiliated with the Android App Addicts podcast.
Sorry.
Okay, that's too bad.
You're going to have to cancel whatever.
Oh, yeah, he'll get over it. I mean, he might have to, you know, untie his tie a little bit, you know, loosen up a bit. Mm-hmm. He can breathe a little easier and he can just get over it.
Yep.
But no, seriously, yeah, go check out the show. It's almost pompous of me to say, but it's the truth, even if I was a listener. Some of my favorite episodes of that show were ones that I was on. Go check out episode 56. Mm-hmm. I don't even want to say what happened on that show, but it was groundbreaking, and it shook up the entire spectrum of Android App Addicts. So go check that out.
Changed it forever.
It did. All right, Dor. Well, hey, where can we find you online, man?
Easiest place, of course, podnuts.com, but also I am on the Google Plus. My name, phonetically spelled, is Stephen McLaughlin. That makes it really easy to find, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. It totally does. Yeah,
there you go. We also have communities on Google Plus, Podnuts community, Linux for the Rest of Us community, Android App Addicts communities, where all the apps are posted, Mobile Dynasty communities, and if we need more, we just make them because they're free.
If we don't already, we should get a Geeksters community.
I concur.
Yeah. If you guys like hearing a bunch of dudes just sitting around a table talking tech, definitely check out Geeksters as well. Fantastic show on the network. Hosted by our own semi-regular Linux the Rest of Us co-host, Martin Rambo Abando, a.k.a. MBO. Mm-hmm. Very good show there.
And really good guys on that show, like Mitch and Tim.
Mitch the Gentleman Heyman.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't given Tim a nickname yet. I want to say the ponytail, but that's a little too on the nose. It's too easy.
Man of the Hour, laugh, Bauer Meister.
I'd have to call him the Laugh, because if he was a villain, if he was a supervillain, he would be the Laugh.
Yes, he would.
Because, I imagine him, like, he can't genuinely just laugh on cue, like, he needs to be told a joke, and then he lets out the laugh, but it's like a sonic boom that just eviscerates the hero.
Yes.
Or the crowd, the school bus full of children or whatever. But he needs to genuinely be humored first.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Tim the Laugh Bauermeister. Yeah, great, great, great show. Definitely go check it out. I, of course, am Cody Cooper. Please just definitely follow me on Google Plus. Like I said earlier, I'm getting ready to post some pics of my new rig setup. I'd love to hear your comments or suggestions if you know a way I can maybe do my cabling a little bit better, or if you know a little cool little thing that I could maybe pick up at a local, little place. Oh, you should try this kind of shelving or whatever. I don't care what it is. Just throw it at me. I'd love to hear it. You can send an email. Especially with, like I said earlier, about those, including your kids and your tech projects, to cody@podnuts.com. If you would like to send a voicemail to the show, please call into 7076-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688. And please, if possible, try to keep them under 60 seconds. If they go a little over, that's fine. But if you go like beyond 3 or 4 minutes, then Google Voice cuts you off. And then you need to call back and reiterate everything. And then we have to listen to 12 to 15 minutes worth of stuff and then address that on the show. So shorter chunks, call as often as you want, but just shorter ones will be great. And if you do want to send an email directly to the show, please send it to podcast@linuxtotherestofus.com. As always, you've heard us speak about our good friend Jonathan Nato. He runs the Accessible Computing Foundation. You can go to the acf.co and check out all the great projects he has going, bringing digital sight to those who desperately need it, those people with disabilities. You can become a regular contributor to the ACF for as little as $2 a month, and that money goes directly into development of software that will help these people become more able computer users. In addition to that, you can also help him seed his Linux distribution, Sonar, which is an accessible Linux distribution based off of Manjaro Linux, which is based off of Arch. By following the link in the show notes, you can help seed the torrents to help distribute it easier to many other people who desperately need the easier access to the distribution. It would be much appreciated. If you're going to be shopping online, please, as always, like I mentioned earlier, check out that pluggable stuff by going to podnuts.com/Amazon. If you use that affiliate link, we do get a little bit of a cut of that sale. You're not going to pay any more than you would normally for purchasing those items anyway, but it does help out the network, and we do pour those funds into a variety of things to help ultimately create better content for you, the listener. You can also go to podnuts.com/Newegg or /eBay. If you're going to be purchasing items there, that also does help us out. We would really appreciate it. And thank you very much for listening, everybody. And please remember that Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.